No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Welcome in to the Blake Street Banner. It's the Rockies Insider, me, Patrick Lyons, on Blake Street Banner with my very loyal co-host, Noah Spark. What's going on, buddy?
Nothing much. You know, I'm coming to you another week, another state. I'm in South Carolina right now at Myrtle Beach for a little family vacation, but always have enough time to talk Rockies baseball. So I'm doing well.
I should be able to tell with the shutters you have in the background, that feels very southeastern U.S.
Yeah, it's got a couple of rainy days to start off, but today is beautiful and excited to get out there after the show's over.
How much more excited are you? And maybe it's more of a net neutral. More excited are you about getting out to Coors Field next week and getting to talk to new manager Warren Schaefer?
You know, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. He was always super kind last year before every media scrum with Bud Black. He'd always make sure to say what's up to all of us. Seems like a really cool guy. You know him much better than I do, but should be really interesting. I'm excited. I believe, yeah, that'll be the first home game with him leading a scrum. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it should be exciting. I do want to get a lot more of your thoughts on Bud Black getting fired, Warren Schaefer coming in, a couple of the other shifts in the coaching staff, and, you know, is this a sign of more changes to come? Do want to get those thoughts. But the Warren Schaefer era starts with a loss, a much more different loss. It felt different, 2-1. They're only able to scrape the one run across home plate, but they got an early lead. They got a great performance by Chase Dolander. And then even late, they make a surge with the bases loaded in the ninth inning. It doesn't work out, but it feels differently. Maybe it's just because of the person who made up the lineup card, new manager, all of a sudden, hey, you know what? This game isn't out of reach, despite the fact the result being similar to what it's been in the past.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting following along the live broadcast. Spilly was right down there by the Rockies dugout, as he normally is. And the pitch before Kyle Farmer ultimately grounded into that double play to end the game, he said the energy in the dugout right now is great. The Rockies want this one so bad. Start off your new manager on the right foot. Unfortunately, they weren't able to get it done. But you're right. I think it was exciting in a lot of different ways. Of course, Rocky's social media posting pictures of Warren bringing out the lineup card for his first lineup written as a major league manager. That's always cool. And then Chase Dolander walked the leadoff batter of the game and then pitched into the sixth inning without allowing a hit. Ultimately gave up the two-run homer, which led to him taking a hard luck loss. But Chase Dolander had his best outing as a big leaguer and kept the Rockies in the game. And every time the Rockies go on the road following a homestand, you know that, you know, they'll kind of have to battle through a low-scoring game. They were able to do it in San Francisco on the last road trip, to much of our surprise. Not able to in Texas last night, but it was a great game, very entertaining game to watch. And in a season with so many losses, I think entertainment value has to be a priority for the Rockies.
That's a fair point. And knowing that you're not going to get a ton of run support means that you're balancing on a tightrope. And Chase Dolander, again, despite being so young in his career as a rookie, he knew that. And yet he was able to go out and deliver in a performance like that, where, as you said, walking the leadoff hitter of the game, did not come back to haunt, as we all know. Didn't at that time. Retired 15 in a row, I believe, at one point. And you had that play in the fifth inning to end the fifth where Brenton Doyle makes a great catch. And you go, every no-hitter has that one play. Is this one going to be it? Unfortunately, Wyatt Langford hits that two-run home run to end the no-hitter, end the shutout, erase the lead. I know in the in our Slack channel for Blake Street Banner, it was mentioned that, I think, was it you that you were watching the TV side? I was listening to radio. What did Spilly say just before Langford's home run?
Yeah, the pitch before, he says, well, it is Wyatt Langford's bobblehead night here at the ballpark, so he's looking to give the crowd some excitement, and wham, there it goes. It's unlucky.
That's a rule. If you have a bobblehead, you hit a home run. Like, you have a big day. That's going to happen. So we know when Brenton Doyle is going to at least hit one more home run, as long as he's not on the IL. And then Tovar, we know. So those two bobblehead days, lock in home runs for those guys. But you saw Chase, like, he was really, I feel like I've seen it before, but it maybe had more of a spotlight on it on Monday, where he was frustrated with a few of his pitches, you know, snapping at the ball with his mitt, walking to the back of the mound in the sixth, actually, I think before the home run. Darryl Scott came out to go talk with him after one of those reactions. So you saw him, you know, trying to be really fine, but that's okay, because those are the high expectations that he has of himself, and wanting to deliver a victory in the first game with Warren Schaefer, and wanting to be a leader by example for this group of guys, where the vibe is now changing, and it's a more energetic with now the second youngest manager in baseball, 40-year-old Warren Schaefer. So that was really good to see. Again, same outcome, but it did feel really different in general down in Arlington on Monday night.
Yeah, we talk so much about Chase's composure and how he carries himself as a big leaguer here and just beginning his second month in the pros. I thought it was interesting. In the second inning, he strikes out the side and he struck out five of the first six. But in looking at him, you really wouldn't have known. I think even Kyle Freeland, when he starts rolling, will have that little strut off the mound after a strikeout. Chase really didn't show any of that. He always seems to be quietly confident, and you have to be that way at Coors Field. At pitching as a Rockies pitcher, because look, you're going to give up home runs and you just got to get that next ball back and realize that that is in the past. But as the game progressed, you know, certainly he realizes what he's doing. Every pitcher does. And so when Brenton Doyle made that leaping catch, or diving catch is a better way to describe it, to end the fifth inning, they showed a little replay of him just clapping it up for Brenton Doyle, maybe a little tip of the cap too. But in the sixth, as you mentioned, Darryl Scott came out after he walks the leadoff man on really five pitches that weren't close. First pitch, changeup, and Tucker Barnhart fouled it off. And then the other four weren't within a foot of the strike zone. And he started the next batter, Ezekiel Duran, out in the exact same way. And Scott just ran to the mound and got him to focus back in. He got the next two outs, but then Langford stepped to the plate and hit the big fly. I think it's important that we recognize, you know, he took whatever Darryl Scott had to say, and the broadcast kind of said that it was more mechanics instead of talking through an approach to a hitter. You know, he took that, locked it back in for two batters, and then Langford's homer, it was a fastball out over the plate, but Langford, to his credit, took it the other way. So it wasn't a bad pitch, and when you throw 98, you can get away with throwing the ball a little bit over the heart of the plate. But that was my favorite outing of the year, maybe, to watch, and it was coming off the heels of Herman Marquez. How about that? He turned in over a six-inning performance at Coors Field, and that felt so needed for the Rockies. What did you see from Herman on the prior day?
Yeah, he just looked like the old version of himself, where he definitely had command of his pitches. And, you know, between Sunday and Monday, where obviously we knew what happened Sunday post game, but following Saturday's 21-0 loss, it was very much, you know, I think there was just this vibe that, okay, this is probably going to be the end of it, or now we really have hit rock bottom. So let's turn some things around. If not, you know, either for Buddy, which Herman Marquez was going out there to perform for Buddy, or on Monday when it was Chase Dolander. And, you know, both those guys, you know, I think hopefully trending in the right direction for the staff to lead by example in that way. And I couldn't help but think when you bringing up Darryl Scott going out there and talking about mechanics in a no-hit bid, and it reminded me of the no-hitter by Ubaldo Jimenez in 2010, when the pitching coach at that time, Bob Apodaca, said, don't go from the windup, just go from the stretch. And so making those mechanical adjustments with a pitching coach and a young pitcher can have those positive results. It didn't end up working out, of course, on Monday, but it did feel like it was, in general, a good start to the Warren Schaefer era. Burge asking, one has to think that Tolia's leash has to be very short, leading the league in strikeout rate. There was a spot too early on where, you know, it felt like it was the same old story with the Rockies. In fact, it was in the top of the seventh. So immediately after the Rangers take that 2-1 lead, Goodman with a leadoff double, he's been fantastic. And then Tolia strikes out on three pitches, does not advance the runner. Just a ground ball to the right side would have done that very easily. And we saw some mixing and matching then. Texas brings in Robert Garcia. Bouchard comes in to pinch hit. He hits a deep fly that advances Goodman from second to third. And you can't help but think, man, if Tolia could have just put that ball in play to the right side, Goodman's on third, and then Bouchard's fly out would have been a sacrifice fly. You would have been able to tie the game. And unfortunately, it doesn't work. Kyle Farmer came in to pinch hit. And Bruce Bochy countered with a five-pitch walk, and then you got Amador to strike out swinging. So that's part of the problem that the Rockies have, is that despite all the right chess moves, which it really felt like Schaefer was able to maneuver really well, and I think Bud Black, you know, is a good chess master as well. But Schaefer, I think, pushed the right buttons. You could push all the right buttons you want, but if you are outclassed and you are outmatched by a better team, you're just going to lose.
Yeah, and that's been somewhat of a discourse online and on social media with, you know, Bud Black, was he or was he not the problem? I mean, I think we all know the answer. Bud Black, the manager, is not fully responsible for the play of the Rockies, and we'll get into more of that later. But to more of Burge's point on Michael Tolia, there has been improvement since Clint Hurdle took over. Shout out to Luke Hall at Oak Tree Status on Twitter. He posted the stats for Tolia before and after Hurdle was hired. Before, he had a 47% strikeout rate in 67 plate appearances, and this tweet was posted May 9th. But since, it had been cut to 23% in 73 plate appearances. So Hurdle has obviously changed something in Tolia's approach that has, you know, cut the strikeouts in half, given that was 3 days ago, but it couldn't have changed much in two ball games. So Tolia obviously working through some swing adjustments, but it does, you need, and we talk about it all the time, situational at bats, not getting that runner over. And you explained it well, but it could have led to a tie ball game. You never know how the rest of it plays out because the Rockies bullpen has been pretty good for most of the season. So you hate to see a wasted opportunity like that. I know last year he got sent to AAA, came back up, and that's what began his big run. Do you see that even being an option this year for Michael Tolia?
I don't. Dariela's pointing out there's not a ton of depth to send Tolia back to AAA, unfortunately. That's another piece of this, too. Again, just because you have a new manager that may want to do things differently, what are his options? I believe Yankiel Fernandez is the only one on the 40-man roster that's not currently in the majors or on the IL. So there just aren't those moves and those transactions. Keston Hera has been the guy at first base for Albuquerque for the most part. So I don't really think you've got an upgrade. And for what you were able to see at Tolia last year and the improvements that you pointed out there, Noah, via Luke Hall, he's trending in the right direction. There's just going to be those small sample sizes of you look and say, oh man, that was killer that he wasn't able to get a ball down on the ground to get the runner over. That being said, you take a much further look back and say, overall, since Clint Hurdle was instituted as the hitting coach and he'll now be the interim bench coach, Tolia has been playing better. But it does bring an interesting point that, you know, didn't think of it until really this morning, because it was a lot of unpacking everything having to do with Bud Black, you know, going on foul territory, talking with some radio stations up in Wyoming. It's been about Bud Black and just the dysfunction of the Rockies. But in looking at it just from the lens of Warren Schaefer, it'll be interesting to see how he utilizes some of the young players. You know, Buddy certainly was a guy that had his preference for veteran guys versus some of the young players. And if frankly, you take a look at what some of the young players have been doing so far this season, and they have been underperforming and they've frustrated. And there's been some fundamental mistakes that young players do make, and some of them do need that, you know, more seasoning. And if you only have a couple of those guys, or even one of those guys who don't have enough minor league seasoning, you can get by with those kind of mistakes. But when you have virtually a roster full of those kind of guys, it's hard to hide that player. So, you know, I'm not sure if this means more playing time for Adiel Amador. I'm not sure if this means, you know, he moves up in the order. I don't think there's really going to be too many drastic changes, but there could be some room for some differences. Again, you know, possibly guys being shifted around in the batting order, or maybe Michael Tolia, now that his streak is over, maybe you see him on the bench a little bit more and you say, you know what, we want to get Martinez bat in the lineup, and we want to, you know, Stallings is catching, we need Goodman in the lineup. So you know what, Tolia, we are going to, you know, sit you down despite the numbers improving. There's still some more changes that need to be made. I think it's more likely for Schaefer to make a move like that than when Buddy was the manager.
Yeah, and I think the way last year that Tolia was platooned almost to not hitting against lefties because his right-handed stance, I remember doing a show last year, not pitching the idea because social media had pitched it for me, but like he should drop the switch hitting because it had reached that depths of poor play. This year, it feels like Amador has been platooned to only hitting against right-handed arms, and I bring him up because he had struck out in a large spot last night. It feels like if we're talking about young guys getting more run, Amador has to be in line for that. I'm not sure if we'll be able to see that. If you try to think of the way that these guys can plug into the infield, if Tolia is out at first base, they tried Bouchard there. It didn't go well. So you can put Hunter Goodman there and have Stallings behind the plate. But with the amount of veterans on this team, you talk about Kyle Farmer and Nick Martini, you almost run out of space for these young guys to get playing time. Bud Black mentioned in a couple of press conferences earlier this season that, look, Zach Veen got his shot, and we're going to see more young guys be able to do that. I'm not sure who will be the next one to come up, but you know, you talk about Yankiel Fernandez. It figures that with Bud Black gone, I would imagine that would be sooner rather than later in terms of what it was before. Is that a correct assumption?
Say that again. What, that just the team just to be operated in a similar capacity?
Is a guy like Yankiel Fernandez more likely to debut sooner rather than later in relation to how under Bud Black it would have been?
Yeah, that's a great question. You'd have to think yes, you know, simply because giving Yankiel Fernandez an opportunity might, you know, equally speak to Warren Schaefer. Again, should he make a decision like that, it might equally speak to, hey, this guy has been performing in the minor leagues. Again, there are things that Yankiel Fernandez does need to work on. And, you know, we typically only look at the box score, whereas, you know, the manager is getting updates from the coaching staff about, yeah, he did go 2-for-4 and that looked great and looked like a double, but the double was actually a lazy fly ball that the left fielder tripped on. And, you know, the one single was just a ball that was kind of booted and it was questionable to be an error. So really he didn't hit the ball well in any of his four at bats. Whereas we're looking at it as he went 2-for-4 with a double and maybe in one of those hits, a run scored. So it was an RBI and you go, this guy is producing. And it's not exactly like that, but still, I think it's equally that you want to give a guy a chance, an opportunity. You know, Schaefer is in an interesting spot where he's managing for this year, but also, you know, I imagine he wants to keep things in mind of like, well, I do plan on being here for a little while, so I have to balance, you know, this idea of getting some of these young players more exposure because they're going to be the tools that I have in my toolbox going forward, 2026 and beyond. So I can't just rely on the older, more veteran players right now. It has to be more of a mix. And that might be a more of a mix than what Bud Black was like. But in addition to giving guys opportunity, it might also be sending a message to someone of, hey, we need you to work on this thing. And now we're going to take some playing time away from you, even if it's just one game. Maybe it is a demotion to the minor leagues for whoever it might be. Michael Toglio, I would not put in that group, but it could be certain, you know, of those messages of you have to perform, you have to do the things that are expected of you. And if you're not getting that done, you know, too bad, so sad. There has to be a certain level of accountability that I don't know that's always been there in the past. And again, I think that could end up being a positive overall for this team now.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I'm wondering, Warren Schaefer is in such a tough spot because the roster right now is not built to win. And if you want to yourself as a manager, pitch yourself to be not more than the interim, but become the full-time manager, you would think that it's a results-based industry, so you would have to win to do that.
Yeah.
MLB Network's John Heyman, in his tweet announcing the move that the Rockies made, ended it by saying, pray for Warren Schaefer because of the state of the Rockies. Do you think, look, the Rockies have another 3 weeks before they play a team with a losing record. This Warren Schaefer is going to have the job until the end of the season. What do you think he has to do this year? Let's just, you know, I'll ask you straight up. What does Warren Schaefer have to do to pitch himself to the front office as the fix and the manager moving forward into 2026?
I think in terms of what the front office, what they're looking at, I think the bar is probably really low because, as I said, there has to be a certain level of accountability that I think Warren Schaefer can keep his players to, but the front office doesn't really hold a lot of accountability to other people. So, you know, that being said, win-loss record is not that critical. I think if the Rockies can avoid 121 losses and tying the record or even setting it, that in and of itself is a victory. It's certainly a victory that, you know, the rest of baseball will laugh at, thinking, wow, you think this guy's like this great manager because you basically had a pace of 110 losses. I did the math. I forget what it. Oh yeah, and excluding Monday's game, Monday and Tuesday's game, the Rockies would have to go 35-87, which is a .287 winning percentage, and extrapolated over 162 games is a 116 loss season, which isn't even that far off from the 121 losses. So to lose 120 games, which means you're only winning 42, you just have to have a 46 win pace. Like it's ridiculous, right? So
yeah.
And I think he can do that. I think just the change and the vibe that's in the clubhouse and just the way he's going to go about his business and the energy that he has and that we've already seen so far in Texas, I think he'll be able to do that. And I think that in and of itself will be enough for the team to say, okay, yeah, this guy did his job. We'll bring him back. Or the other potential could be if, you know, the Rockies do bring in an outside evaluator, which I do know from sources that there could be some conversations going on this week to bring in an outside evaluator. Might not be somebody from another organization, but still, they might, again, reevaluate certain things and then go and say, all right, for what we now want to do here in, you know, October of 2025, now we want to go a different direction, despite the fact that Warren Schaefer probably did do everything he needed to do to keep his job. Maybe they can keep him around in some capacity. I don't know what that would be. But again, a lot would need to happen. Schaefer can only control, you know, the games that he is managing, and it's been so far so good. And I think overall he will allow them to, you know, get enough wins to avoid losing 121 games.
Yeah. Well, in the 121 loss record, and Burr's saying he thinks that Schaefer will be the full-time manager going forward, he'll have his opportunity to earn that spot. I want to touch on the Rockies avoiding the 121 loss record might not be the only one that they have to avoid, because on the road this year, the Rockies are 2-18. That's an 8-win pace. And when we recorded last week, it was a 10-win pace. So it's dropped off 2 games from what we thought was unfathomable. Patrick, how close to record territory is that?
Man. Well, look, all you got to do is, you know, win a game in Texas or in Arizona, and all of a sudden, again, that will shift things dramatically because you don't have a ton to work with. So there is that, but yeah, that's just so wild, right? To think that they are so far. The current Rockies record for fewest amount of road wins in a season is 14, but that came in a 60 game season. So they only played 30 games on the road and they won 14. So really the low mark for them would have been 2014, where they won only 21 games. They've got a long way to go until they get there. So that's really bad. I crunched the numbers. There's only been 50 times in which a team has won 20 or less games on the road in the season in baseball history. Four of them came in a shortened 1981 season. Two came in a shortened 1994 season. 15 or less road wins. It's never happened in a 162 game season. So even just hitting 15 would be a dubious mark for a franchise that's already pretty bad on the road.
Yeah, well, and I'm looking at their road schedule, and it just doesn't get any easier anytime soon. I mean, after, and then it's the Cubs and the Mets before they finally get the Marlins. Atlanta, the Rockies seem to always struggle in Atlanta. And then
Washington. When you're the worst team in baseball, everyone you play is going to be better than you. And right now the National League has become what the Western Conference used to be in the NBA, where all the best teams were there. So like they're going to get a reprieve on the 4th of July against the White Sox, when 48,000 people will pack the stadium to watch the two worst teams in all of baseball. That's baseball.
I just now noticed that was the 4th of July slate. Wow.
How about this? Think about this. Warren Schaefer is the eighth manager in Rockies franchise history since 1993. How many managers have the Miami Marlins had in that time? Do you know?
Oh, gosh.
Name them. No, I'm kidding.
I couldn't even try.
No. I'd miss a couple, too.
Mattingly is the one that came to mind.
He's the iconic Marlins manager for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Other than that, Shoemaker.
Sure.
Okay.
You got Jim Leland, who won the World Series with them in 1997, and Jack McKeon in 2003.
I don't know if I could go further than that.
Give me a number then.
I was gonna say like, off the top of my head, I thought 14. That was the first number that popped into my mind.
Since 1993, the Rockies have had 8 managers and the Marlins have had 17.
Oh my gosh. Dang, more than double.
Yeah. Now they also have never won the NL East, but they've got 2 World Series. And I mean, they've been a dumpster fire as well, but they've got the rings at least. Yeah. So, I mean, that's, again, you talk about it like a yin and yang kind of situation between the Rockies and Marlins. Like, they've done it in two different ways, where the Marlins are almost like they have a tank cycle. Like, they'll tank twice in a row and then win a World Series. Tank twice in a row. Granted, they haven't won in a while, but it's just one of those interesting, you know, juxtapositions between the two franchises.
Yeah. My goodness. And they have the 2 World Series, but the Marlins haven't been, I mean, that much greater than the Rockies in terms of, you know, every other year. Even this year, the only team that the Rockies are playing within the next month is the Marlins. That you go into that series like, well, when is this team going to win a series? It might just be the Marlins series.
That's a great question. Let me pull the schedule out.
Yeah, and I dropped in the remaining strength of schedule for every team in baseball. The White Sox have the hardest, and the Rockies have the second hardest. Now, this is skewed because every team that plays against those teams, the Rockies and White Sox are giving out wins to their opponents. So it's a bit skewed for the bad teams to have tough schedules, but goodness, the Rockies' easiest opponents the rest of the year are the White Sox for 3 games, the Pirates 6 times, and look, their pitching staff is going to give this Rockies lineup a ton of trouble. The Marlins 6 times, the Orioles, Nationals, and Angels. And those 3 teams, I feel like they've all taken a step forward, except the Orioles. but the talent on that Orioles team is still a 100-win talent. So I don't know how you look at them and consider them one of the easiest. This is just the numbers, though.
They'll win a series, obviously. They'll win a couple. Because, again, in a three-game series, it's just, okay, you know, can the Rockies win one game in a three-game series against any team in baseball? Yes, because that's baseball.
Yeah.
All you got to do is win one more. So like that one extra game. So the first one is like, it's just baseball. It's sort of luck, right? Again. So then you just got to win one out of the two. It's possible. Like it'll happen. Like, you know, we say this and you go, you know what? June 24th through 26th, they take 2 of 3 from the Dodgers. Like, okay, right? That's crazy. They're not going to do that. Just because they don't play the Dodgers very well. But maybe they, you know, spoil the Diamondbacks at home. The real question is, when do they win on the road? Do they win a road series? That's where it becomes a challenge. And again, it might just be getting a team at the right time.
Yep.
It would be interesting to study when the Rockies, you know, go on the road and, you know, do they play better during the second city series or the first, right? Going from Denver to wherever versus wherever city A to city B, mm-hmm. Like where do they actually have more luck? And I would think it would be that second city, right? Like they're not going from altitude to sea level. They're going from sea level to sea level. So now they're on game four at playing at sea level. So maybe that's where, you know, they play better. And again, is that something that the analytics department should know and then say, okay, well, why are they playing better in the second series? Oh, because they've seen what the ball, how it moves more aggressively. And, you know, the Rockies have done some of those things. Most of it has been brought in by Charlie Blackman and people not actually in the analytics department, unfortunately, but that's a story for another day. What do you got?
I feel like we're right on this track, so I want to bring it up. If you look at the September schedule for the Rockies, might this be the lowest scoring month in franchise history? The road games are Dodgers, San Diego, Seattle, and San Francisco.
Ooh.
At home, they get the Giants, the Padres, the Angels, and the Marlins. So a whole coastal month. That's wild. Number one.
They get the Marlins and the Angels at home at the worst possible time when it's just totally irrelevant. But again, for narrative purposes, that maybe comes as a good thing where, you know, you let's say you go 4-2 at home in your final home series, you win on that final day, you know, you're going around Coors Field, slapping high five, saying goodbye to everybody before you go out for the final week of the regular season. And people are going, hey, you know, the last I saw the Rockies, they were pretty good. They looked solid. They won, you know, 4 of 6 against the Marlins and Angels. Hey, weren't they really bad? Oh, we're not going to talk about that. Just they played really well. And so, you know, this year's schedule is actually, you know, I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist. I think I've touched on this before, but you know, with the power that Dick Monfort has in the commissioner's office and getting certain things and, you know, getting his wishes granted, it is a little curious to think how perfect the schedule works out. You've got, you know, the home opener is against the A's. Great. Because it's the home opener. People are going to show up. You don't need to play the Dodgers, yeah. Right? You want to play the Dodgers during the week to get people out because they're already going to come on the weekend. You want to play them on weekdays. And lo and behold, what do you know? They play the Dodgers twice during the week. Huh? You also have the White Sox. You got to play them at home at some point. When's a good time to play them? How about 4th of July weekend? Oh, great. That works out really well. And you know what? September, no one's really going to be paying attention to your team. So why don't you go out on the road 2 of the final 3 weeks of the season? Hey, that's great for us. Who do you want to play as your final 6 games at home? How about the Marlins and, oh yeah, the Angels? They're awful. Mike Trout will probably be injured by that point in the season. So you know what? That's like the most perfect schedule I feel like you could possibly make up. And then you get it. You get that schedule. You get the Pirates on the weekend. So all right, look, no one's really coming out to see Paul Skeens during the week, but on the weekend, maybe now all of a sudden that changes things a little bit. The schedule is pretty perfect for the Rockies from a business standpoint and from wins and losses when we talk about September, that final home series, you know?
Yeah. You know, I hadn't thought about it in a conspiracy way, but it does line up in a pretty unique fashion. You know, I never think that too much thought goes into creating the MLB schedule, because at this point, I like the rule changes where you play everyone once a year. So there's not that much room for wiggling. But if you were to write a story, this is a Rockies picked story from Patrick Lyons, the Rockies insider.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens with that. How surprised were you, though, on Sunday? Where were you when you got the news? Was it a tweet? Were you watching the game? What was the deal?
I was sitting on the couch, and the Nuggets game had just ended or was currently playing. And I remember standing up like, whoa, the Rockies fired Bud Black. Although, I want to give both of us our flowers here. We both mentioned on the Saturday before something about a feeling like, okay, like this is getting close. 21-0. And you weren't in the ballpark on Sunday, so I bet you were missing about that. But
I was surprised. Not that much. I don't know. If I was there, I don't know. I honestly didn't have any like FOMO. Like obviously I'd always love to be at the ballpark on those days, but it was Mother's Day. And so yeah. I was happy to be with my mom, and I don't know, maybe it's better that I didn't have that. Cause I don't think I said this on the Rockies Insider podcast. I was building up to it, and then I pivoted to something else, cause I'm balancing too many things in my head, cause it just doesn't shut up in there. It never shuts up in there.
Yeah.
So be thankful that you have the ability to turn me off, because I don't, I have to. But after that 21-0 loss on Saturday, first off, we were all kind of looking around. Actually, I was the only one looking around. Everyone else just kind of had this dead stare ahead. And I'm looking around like, do we have to go downstairs? Like, do we – I'm joking. But I'm like, what are we going to say? And like, what – like, I honestly don't know, because, you know, there's a lot that I already do know. And I'm not going to ask a question to try to, you know, be inflammatory and get a response like that. But I went down and I just asked a question about Steven Kolek. Like I didn't care. But again, sometimes that's part of the job of like, hey, only a second start, used to be a big prospect. What are your thoughts? And, you know, and in a strange way, it felt like I was throwing a lifesaver to Buddy of like, all right, let's just talk baseball, not how miserable this is. And, you know, he got done with our questions and I watched him walk out of the room, and I thought, this could be the last time I see Buddy leave this room, and it was.
Yeah. I was surprised because it came after a win, and then they went on to say that the decision was made in the morning, so they just let him have a last hoorah. Real quick, because Andrew Mason's been tracking this, the Rockies on the last games of homestands are a perfect 4-0 now. And every other day, they're...
No one plans for hair loss. But through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
For 37, something like that. They have 3 wins every other day. I think it's really interesting. Why is Bud Black just the scapegoat here? I mean, I know the answer, but I want to hear your explanation for it.
Yeah, he is. Just things need to change, and this is like the easiest thing that you could change, despite, again, someone not necessarily having, you know, he deserves better than that. And he has been a very good manager, but sometimes you just need to change the wallpaper, right? Sometimes you just need to change things. And that's the easiest thing to do. It doesn't mean that, you know, they shouldn't be doing more changes, because I think that's the big one. And there's, you know, sort of a misunderstanding, I think online and on social media in a lot of different ways. You know, I think we often forget in life that two things can be true at the same time. There's one thing that can be true, and then the opposite isn't false, right? You know, Bud Black, you know, should have been let go of his job. So then that means he was a bad manager. No, it doesn't actually mean that, right? And then when you say, well, it doesn't mean he was a bad manager, the opposite of that is, so he was a good manager and he should have kept his job. No, he shouldn't have. So two things can be true, where he's a good manager and yet they needed to go in a different direction. And I thought they've needed that since 2023 to maybe make some change for a lot of these young guys in the clubhouse, many of whom, you know, were still fine and they still had that growth. You know, we've still seen, you know, no pause in the progress from Doyle and Tovar and Tolia, you know, bloomed last year. So in a way, it's kind of no harm, no foul, but you do have, you know, Tovar and Doyle and Tolia, basically, these three guys, they know nothing but 100 lost seasons as big leaguers. And that's not good. That's not a good thing. And, you know, had a change maybe been made sooner, we're looking at, you know, guys that only know 90 lost seasons, which isn't much better, but it's not to the same level of embarrassment. So I think it was necessary. It's unfortunate, but, you know, I think it could help breed new life just a little bit. And, you know, I think in the wake of the firing of Bud Black, you know, a lot of people, you know, nationally jumped on board to say, here are my thoughts on the Rockies, because even before 21-0, we started to get more articles about how poorly the Rockies were. You know, Cody Stavenhagen wrote about it. He was there before the Padres series for The Athletic to write about, you know, what's going on in Denver, what's happening with the Rockies. And finally, with Bud Black getting fired, it was, all right, now there's somewhat of an innocent victim here to this situation. And the whole organization is just totally messed up. And for all the people in Denver that say, hey, these people on the coast, they have no idea what's going on here in Denver. They're wrong. They're not. They're not. The Rockies are what's wrong. There's been no game plan by this front office. And changing the general manager to someone in-house doesn't mean, hey, there's a new game plan, let's stick this out. There's been no change in the game plan if you're paying attention. So pat yourself on the back if you want. If you follow Denver sports and you think you know what's going on, guess what? So does everybody else on the outside, because it's pretty easy to see how bad things have been for the Rockies.
Yeah, the word you mentioned was necessary, and that is the word that Dick Monfort used in the statement that he released and the Rockies social media team pushed out. You know, it basically aligned with what you said, because you referenced 2023 and he opens his statement with, our play so far this season, especially coming off the last two seasons, has been unacceptable. He then goes on to say that they are capable of better and they're making these changes so that they can improve where they can on the field and evaluate all areas of our operation. You know, unsurprisingly, most of Rockies fans did not agree with this sentiment, and they use this statement to really just fire back on Monfort himself. I mean, this is a statement. Anytime a move like this is made, you'll get a statement like this. I think when Michael Malone was fired from the Nuggets, it was way more surprising, because he had won a championship and the Nuggets were still competing at the top of the Western Conference. Of course, now David Adelman's done a great job, and he has them battling in the second round. They go tonight again. But, I mean, I'm wondering your thoughts on the statement that Monfort put out, and the Rockies themselves. They had a statement, but it was just saying what the move was. So what do you have on this Monfort statement?
Pretty standard, pretty boilerplate, you know, nothing inflammatory. Thank you, Bud, for your service. We felt like we needed a change. And okay, you've made a change, but it's not a change that's going to alter the results, unfortunately. And that's just how it is. You know, Bill Schmidt, you know, 24 hours before the firing, you know, said like, yeah, we think Buddy's doing a good job. And then understandably so after 21-0. But again, it just really just underlines the communication that's going on inside the front office and, you know, what page everybody is on. Bill even talked Sunday afternoon, and listening to the audio, you know, said like, oh, well, we think we could have done better, while at the same time saying, we've also been without Doyle and Tovar for, you know, long stretches, and a guy that they clearly think is, I don't know, Jose Altuve 2.0. We haven't had Tyro Estrada all season long, but yet should be playing a lot better than we've been. Like, so 5-win differential. Like, I really don't know what the Rockies expected, but this is the same franchise that going into 2023, Dick Monfort said, hey, we think we could be close to 500. And they lost 100 games that year. And they also made transactions after the fact that when Monfort made those comments, and they brought in players like Brad Hand and Mike Moustakas and paid $7.5 million to Jurickson and Profar to not be available for the first two games and not even be on the bench. So there's a disconnect between reality and what's going on in the Rockies front office.
Yeah. I mean, did you see the quote that Dave Roberts had on this situation? I'll read it out loud for the listeners that haven't seen it. But when asked about the firing of Bud Black, who is extremely close with Dave Roberts, and Patrick, maybe you can speak to that connection in just a second. He said, I don't think Casey Stengel could change the outcome of that ball club. That is not the manager's fault. I mean, that is as straightforward as it gets. And I, you know, it's true. Like, the manager isn't the one out on the field playing, but I mean, it could just be a best friend defending his best friend. But what do you think of that Roberts statement?
It's funny because that was brought up twice in the spots that I did yesterday. That was like the first thing that was led with. And what's also kind of ironic too, that people maybe don't realize, is that the 1962 Mets that lost 120 games, they're actually managed by Casey Stengel.
Oh, geez.
But we're not talking about that. We're talking about the World Series he won with the Yankees. It's true. Like, the manager is only going to make so much of a difference. I mean, you even look at typically what is run differential, and you can use run differential to come up with the expected win-loss record of your team. And most times, even in a bad situation, maybe you lost 4 or 5 more games than you should have because of your run differential. And maybe that is because you're pushing the wrong buttons, or it could be you have a blowout win like the Reds did against the Orioles, where they went 24-2. So like that, like, kind of shift things over the course of a season. So, you know, managers, I don't think make the same difference that they used to. They're more of a clubhouse manager, really, than any kind of, you know, general manager where they're acquiring players and bringing guys in. So they're just, you know, the mouthpiece. They're at the front of the class in terms of the coaching staff and all the ideas and the final decision maker, which usually is going to be what the team and the coaching staff thinks is best, maybe not even what the manager himself thinks. So yeah, Dave and Bud Black are neighbors, but not in the literal sense. They just live in the same town on the coast in California, where I have a good friend who is actually a teacher in that town. And he teaches two of the kids of a couple former big league players. So it's just kind of funny to be like, hey, so-and-so's kids are in my class. And I'm like, man, that's where you live, I guess, if you used to be a big league ball player somewhere in San Diego County. Darielis saying, is it really realistic that Bill Schmidt will get replaced this offseason? Because I'm afraid it's going to remain status quo. It will. Until it doesn't, it will. And again, what we've been saying here is, and again, by no means is this a knock on Warren Schaefer, and by no means does he not deserve this opportunity, because he does deserve this opportunity. The change in manager doesn't really change much in terms of this roster. Still the same roster. I think you're going to get a lot of value from Warren Schaefer because of his more energetic approach, and how Buddy was a little more old school and saying, hey, I trust my guys. They're professionals, so I trust what they're doing. And that's not to say Warren Schaefer isn't, but I could see him, you know, I don't know how to phrase it any differently. I could see him getting in the asses of some players and be like, hey, you got to get this done. Whereas Buddy would say, somebody will talk to this guy. He should know he made a mistake there. That won't happen again. They are a professional. I could see Schaefer approaching it a little bit differently. Sean pointing out Bud Black could manage the Dodgers. Also true. So, I mean, we I should reach out to Buddy. I did text him on Monday and just thanking him for everything. And he's been my only manager. 2018 was when I started. So thanked him. He gave me a really nice response back. Maybe I should text him again and say, can you comment on Robert's comments and say, yeah, even Pedro Grifol could manage the Dodgers, but that would be a knock on Dave Roberts. So he wouldn't say that. He's too classy.
Yeah. I agree with everything you've said. I think it's so funny how Duralis put how they were afraid of this. And you said, yeah, well, it's going to happen. Just point blank, it's going to happen. Well, you know how the Rockies operate at this point. So it would be more of a surprise if Bill Schmidt was not the GM going into next year. But Bill Schmidt was, before he became the general manager, he was in the scouting and part of the staff that leads the Rockies to draft their players. At this point, it's his players that he drafted that's starting to come up and percolate in the big leagues. Like, how far, not, I don't want to call it a leash because he's a GM of a franchise, but like, if this season is getting Bud Black fired, the winningest season or the winningest manager in club history, what kind of season would it take for Bill Schmidt to feel his seat heat up?
That's the wrong question. I know what you're saying. And, yeah. And I'm saying it's the wrong question because, like, quote unquote, what will it take? We all thought 100 losses for the Rockies, something that they had prided themselves on forever, was going to be what it would take to bring about a change. And here we are in year three and it's still like, no changes. I think, you know, I don't know how to phrase a question better, but in any other organization, I don't think Bill Schmidt, you know, would still have this job. I think in a large amount of other organizations, he wouldn't have even been appointed in this job because, you know, Dick Monfort did say that, like, yeah, we'll look outside the organization. We'll interview a bunch of candidates. You know, the NFL has the Rooney Rule where you have to interview candidates of minority. And I think it's like the Bud Selig rule. It's not really official, but Bud Selig, I did believe, make sure that was put in place. I don't know how the Rockies were able to go without, you know, really interviewing certain candidates. They did appoint Danny Montgomery as an assistant GM who's been with the organization since 1991. So he's another one of those homegrown guys that's been close to Dick Monfort forever. He is African-American. So I think that was one way to kind of not work around it, like they're trying to work around it, but they checked off their boxes and said, hold on, I know we maybe didn't interview for this position of general manager, but we are going to appoint someone of a minority to be the assistant general manager. So it was, you know, all good in the end. And that's fine. That does make sense. But, you know, at a time in which you're looking to make changes and try to, you know, right the ship after trading Nolan Arenado, abruptly losing your general manager, who, keep in mind, for as much as people want to villainize Jeff Breidich, he's still the only GM to be there for back-to-back winning seasons. And if you look at the first half of 2019, that was a winning club. And when he came to the trade deadline, they did nothing. They did nothing, which led to Nolan Arenado saying, hey, this clubhouse looks a little bit like a rebuild. And that's where they started to butt heads and things went off the rails. And the Rockies haven't been the same since. So I know there are some people within, how would I phrase this? There are some people who are influential in the Rockies that would love to go into another organization and poach some of their best talent. But Dick Monfort does not want to do that. There are people that have Dick Monfort's ear that would love to go to Milwaukee or Cleveland or Tampa or the Dodgers and say, let's get the best baseball people that are out there, bring them to Colorado, and we'll make some of those major changes. And Dick Monfort does not want that.
Yeah. I mean, I can't say anything that would top the intel that you provided throughout that entire sequence. I mean, it's as Rockies as it gets to keep the homegrown guys. You mentioned the assistant being a Rocky down to 1991, being a part of the organization. The Rockies have to find things that they can point to and say, okay, our fans can look forward to this? Because eventually the team will make another postseason, but right now it's all about finding things to look forward to. And as we get into, as you like to call it, our miscellaneous fodder, did you see, and shout out to Twitter for putting this on my feed, Jacob Stallings has a better ERA than any one of our starting, the Rockies starting rotation arms, 4.50.
So. Wow. Is that it? We were debating what his ERA was because none of us could figure the math out.
Maybe I hope Twitter didn't
409. I need to know the exact number now because I know I messed up in my calculation. Okay, it's 4.09, which is even better, which is now virtually impossible for any Rockies starter to have.
It's just,
I don't know. It'll be interesting to get, you know, Schaefer's take on position players pitching because, again, an old school mind goes, that's embarrassing. We're not going to do the embarrassing thing. A new school, maybe more analytic mind goes, you know, we could save our best relief pitchers at a time in which we could save our best relief pitchers because this game is out of reach. And so, sure, it sucks that we got to use Trejo or Stallings or Kyle Farmer. Kyle Farmer's going to pitch this year, mark my word. Like, it sucks that we have to use him. But what would suck even more is that if we went out and used somebody in our bullpen for two innings instead of Jacob Stallings, and now that guy's not available for the next day or the next two when we could actually win a ball game. So we could see an unprecedented amount. We could have somebody pitch this year that's never pitched before. Who would that even be, Noah? So Stallings, Trejo, and Farmer have all pitched. I don't think anyone else has pitched as far as the position players are concerned. Who would be the best for that?
You've got to think about the players too that the Rockies would protect. Like, they're not going to ever put Tovar on the mound.
Yeah, probably not.
I could see Mickey Moniak getting out there.
Sure, why not? Sam Hilliard pitched in college, so did Charlie Blackman. So those would have been two guys from the left. You got two lefties now out of your position player bullpen.
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately, Sam Hilliard in AAA for right now. Playing great, by the way. Maybe Tyler Freeman and Owen Miller, like the utility guys. Actually, what am I saying? I do know the answer to this. So Farmer has experience, so he might be the next one up. But number four, the guy who is yet to pitch in the majors – and very well could, and very well should, Aaron Shunk. Aaron Shunk the closer for Georgia in 2019. He was the closer slash third baseman. So if anyone's going to go out there and huck some baseballs off the mound, Shunky's got to be that guy. So he is definitely in the running to pitch.
That's embarrassing. He told us that. And I was on that call with Aaron when he came on Road to Blake Street a couple of years ago at this point. But Shunk, yeah, he's got to get out there. And they got to have his walk-up song and everything as he warms up out there.
Or do you get a different music? What about that? What if you come in – if you're coming out of the bullpen, which – and actually he'd be coming out of the – that would be the first – well, I guess every time you have a position player pitch – the pitcher's coming out of the dugout and not the bullpen. I've never noticed that. Next time there's a position player pitching, like, look out to the bullpen. Like, is the door even open, or is there like a confusion? Like, if you work the bullpen door, are you opening it? And you're like, you know, Stallings in the pitch. Got it. Let's open the door. And you're like, God, where is he? Somebody let Stallings know. And you're like, no, he's the catcher, but now he's pitching. Like, oh crap. What do I do? Do I just close the door now, or should I wait? Should I leave it open? Should we get some fresh air into this bullpen? Yeah. What do we do?
Yeah. Well, as long as there's a light show involved, like, I'm all good with it.
Which at that point, when the position player's pitching, I don't think they did a light show in the bottom of the ninth. I was curious on Saturday. There was so many things happening, but I was like, oh my God, they better not do a light show in the bottom of the ninth. I'm pretty sure they didn't. Sure they didn't.
It's already notorious for being like the first and only team to give the visiting pitcher a light show of the visiting closer.
Really true though? I don't know that that's true.
It might just be
because it's a light show for your team to be like, you're trying to pump the crowd up. So sure, it does look like it's, you know, for the other closer. Okay. But you're saying there's not any of the other 29 teams don't try to pump their crowd up. I don't know that to be true or not.
Fair.
So you got to look into it. Again, that's the critical thinking mind, I think, that some fans don't always have. Of like, here's what I see. Here's my conclusion. Hold on. What if everybody else does that? Now, all of a sudden, it's not the take that you think it is. So
yeah,
do your research, folks. Watch the ninth inning. When the home team is losing, do they do something like that? I don't know. I could be wrong. Maybe the Rockies are the only one, but I'm willing to bet they're not.
Yeah, and that's something that you just have to go to the ballpark to find out, right? So, because it's not during commercial, you're never going to see it at home.
So are you saying that Blake Schubaner needs to have a GoFundMe to send you all around the U.S. to attend games in different cities, sometimes multiple games in the same city, because you know what? The home team might be winning, and then we don't know. We're going to have to – I got to come back tomorrow now. Hey, no, when are you leaving Seattle? I don't know, man. They've just won 5 games in a row, and they've been leading into the ninth. So I got to stay here and find out what it's like. And then finally, when I do get to the bottom of the ninth, when they're trailing, I'll know. I'll register it on the spreadsheet, and then I'll go to my next city. So clear your calendar, and let's get this GoFundMe going for you, bud.
Let's do – I'm down. You know, it would – if I was in St. Louis right now, I'd be there a long time. They've won 9 straight games. So
it's true.
This would be a very, very fun project.
We would call the GoFundMe the dumbest road trip ever. Like, oh, you want to steal the stadiums? Nope. I'm just kind of curious what it's like. You can't shoot an email out to somebody? Nah. I mean, no. They might lie. They might lie to prevent getting the data that I need. So got to go to every single city. Got it.
A Blake Street Banter original, and then we'll get put on Netflix one day. I like it.
What else would be in the documentary? What else would you do to create content, Noah, if you were going to every ballpark in MLB? What else
food
would you
review? Get? Food review, absolutely. Yeah. And then I like touring stadiums, but when you have media credentials, you can almost give yourself a tour. Like, you know, I paid for the Raiders tour in Las Vegas, but at Coors Field, you walk those tunnels by yourself anyway. So, I'd have to find my favorite food at the stadium, and also just the most random spot in the stadium that probably I shouldn't be allowed, but I am. That'd be it.
I think you'd have to go and find like the most hardcore fan at every ballpark too. Ooh. Sit with them for an inning. You know, figure out, you know, why do they come to games? Is it just to get attention because they wear some crazy outfit? You also have to rate their smell. Like, okay, is there a serious body off of this person who's in this gigantic foam Raiders costume in the middle of the desert with the sun beating down on them? You're like, dude, you're really passionate, but man, you got to reapply the perspirant, you know, every quarter or every 2 innings.
I'll send this to our directors, and then it'll really get put into motion.
These are all good. Yeah, and when we start to come up with some more notes for this documentary road trip / GoFundMe, we'll just record it as a podcast, and we'll just put it all out there. So, you know, just stream of consciousness will be good.
Yeah.
No, go ahead and plug away. Let folks know where they can find all your content at.
Yeah, if you want to see this documentary come into action first, follow me at Noah Spyrick on Instagram, Twitter, all of the above, and at Blake Street Banter.
Content is great too, because he's the kind of guy who knows how to point to his name when he is on a stream live. Like, that's not everybody can do that. It's easier said than done. Yeah. I am Patrick D. Lyons at Patrick D. Lyons at Patrick D. Lyons MLB and Rockies Insider. All that, head over to the YouTube channel, Rockies Insider. Also, head over to the at Blake Street Banner channel over on YouTube as well. They're getting close to about 400 followers and 400 subscribers. So that's going to be a big one. Make sure you go and support them. Thanks for supporting us in the chat. We do appreciate it. But that momentum that you've provided us, it's good. It's great. We love it. But unfortunately, momentum, it's only as good as your next managerial change. So of course,